This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. After Jo Mader's parents split, her dad announced that he was retiring and moving to Miami and then asked, who's coming with me? Well, what teenager wouldn't want to start over in a city like Miami? And though Jo spent part of her high school and early college years being raised by her dad, she didn't come to know him until 25 years after his death. A green metal filing cabinet filled with her father's writings became a window into the heart and mind of a man she thought she already knew. It would also eventually become the source material for her new book, Zirkum and Pull the Push Rods, A Wry Squint at Aviation in Mid-20th Century. Joining us now to talk about her latest book is Jo Mader. Welcome back, Jo.
Hello, Frank. It's so fun to be here, as always.
It's great to be back with a radio person. Got your headphones on and everything. Facebook Live. We're on Facebook Live.
Yes, we're on Facebook.
You can join us on your page, and you can join us on our Facebook page, and you can see this whole lovely thing. So let's talk a little bit about your dad and what you knew about him growing up with your dad. That decision, I guess. Let's start there. Go with him to Miami.
It's interesting. Yeah, going to Miami, and he always treated me like an adult. That's why we got along well. But he was pretty much a stranger to me growing up. He would leave very early in the morning with his business suit and briefcase and go into Washington, D.C. We lived in the suburbs of Virginia and come back late at night. And we were all in our separate worlds. Our family was not very close. And my parents, I always knew there was something not right with their marriage. I think my mother suffered from depression, but also she felt low on the totem pole. He was married to his job. He had a son with a previous wife he was also helping out with. But I always wanted to see that spark between them. I wanted my mom to be Donna Reed, and I wanted them to be our family to be like the ones I saw on sitcoms, and you know, it just wasn't meant to be. So when they finally split up, there was a certain tension that was released. Really. But my brother, my brother Art, who unfortunately passed away just after Easter and was not able to see this book published, but he did read an early draft. He kept saying after I wrote When I Married My Mother, you should write When You Enlisted With My Dad. I said, but there wasn't enough conflict. You've got to have conflict. Unless you consider not knowing someone a form of conflict. But when I found the contents of this green metal filing cabinet and made all these incredible discoveries, in the beginning I thought, oh, this is just going to be a little book. I'll just reprint some of it and I'll do a little 5-page introduction. It just took on a life of its own.
All right. So talk about where he went, because he retires and goes to Miami, but you grew up in the suburbs of D.C. So he's got this, what turns out to be a government job in D.C., wearing a suit. What was he doing?
He started at the CAA, which later became the FAA, as an inspector, because he had been an airplane mechanic and had his own hangar out on Long Island. So he knew how to speak the language of the mechanics, who were basically seen as grease monkeys and really not given much respect. So after post-World War II, there was this explosion in licensed pilots and registered aircraft that created all kinds of havoc for the FAA or CAA then. So my dad he started writing this column for a magazine called Aviation Maintenance and Operations as this folksy Cracker Barrel character called the Inspector. That I never knew about until I found these writings. And he grew up in Brooklyn. You know, why is he sounding like Andy Griffith? You know, what is this?
And the point of these was, you think, to sort of bring people along.
Yeah,
things are changing now, right?
Right. He could speak their language. He was a bridge, but he had to use a pseudonym because he was working for the government.
Right, so let's give us a sample. Maybe you can read What Every Young Man Should Know, or Don't Be Low Man on the Totem Pole is the name of this article.
Okay.
And I think it gives you an idea. And remind us again where these are articles. Or
this was from 1947.
In a magazine.
In a magazine.
Trade magazine.
It's Trade magazine. Okay. And it had a little cartoon with it of this inspector looking at the airplane. Anyway, like I'm going to do it in the voice I heard when I read it.
All right.
Now, this is the story of Jim Purdy. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Yes, old Jim's been around the aviation merry-go-round since 1923. You see, Jim used to fix cultivators down in Fudd, Mississippi, back in the old days. One lazy afternoon, the Yates Flying Circus put down at FUD and gave the good people one of those old-time whoop-de-doo air shows like your grandpa tells about. Well, seems like one of the JNs cracked a landing gear and Jim haywired the rig back in shape. So old Cap Yates shot the fever to our hero, and it was all over by the time you could say GI program. From that day on, Purdy just quit the profitable business of cultivator repairs and became one of the ill-nourished gentry that helped put you and me in the business. Well, in 5 hard years of what the ads say is pleasant, dignified work, Jim Purdy was second to none at twirling the old wire wrench and making the ornery OXs quit misbehaving. He also learned to straighten Curtis Reed props over a tree stump with a 10-pound sledge, bugger Model T nuts and bolts to fit a hisso, and all manner of neat little tricks of the trade for those days. 1928 found old Jim a name to be reckoned with in the manly art of zirkum and pull the push rods.
Joe Mader reading an excerpt from a column that her father wrote for Aviation Maintenance and Operations magazine, which I just let my subscription lapse. But part of the writing's compiled in her latest book, Zirkum and Pull the Push Rods, A Wry Squint at Aviation in the Mid-20th Century. Now, this article goes on, and poor old Jim, you know, gets left behind because finally the technology and the aircraft get more sophisticated, and it turns out that you just can't haywire them back together.
Well, that's also what really struck me when I was reading this, and I was so thrilled when Hoot Gibson, the space shuttle commander, gave me this wonderful quote for the book saying it's just as relevant today. And I've spoken to other aviators, like, yeah, you know, now we're in it's digital versus analog. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, don't want to change. It's been said the only people who like to change are babies in dirty diapers.
What does it mean, zirkum and pull the push rods?
Well, that means, a zirk is a grease fitting.
Okay.
So it's what it actually means. I'm not a mechanic.
So you got to zirk it. It's like the duct tape of a...
As soon as I saw that line, I just said, I love this.
And pull the push rods.
I was blown away by my dad's writing.
So talk about the discovery now, because he's been doing this. And as you say, you had no idea.
When I went back and listened to some interviews I had done with him back in my 20s, he mentions that he wanted to be a reporter. And he said, yeah, I wrote for this magazine. And he just throws it off like it was nothing. He didn't mention it was a character or anything like that. He was very, very modest. So he kept a lot in.
So. So you didn't know and until you discovered. So talk about the discovery. Then
it happened when his last wife, who was much younger than he was, she passed away at the beginning of 2011. And I was down there in Miami. She's still living. She never remarried. She never had children. She's living in the house that she shared with my father. And she willed me one thing, the ballroom gown of my choice. After my father passed away, she became obsessed with ballroom dancing. And she turned his office into her dressing room and filled it with these outlandish, custom-made ballroom gowns. And I always got along with her. I thought she was a hoot. She was British. She was, you know, oh, love, you know. And then she lost, she had part of her leg amputated on one of her legs. And she kept dancing on me peg leg and winning awards. And she was really something. But, the ballroom gown of my choice. Whoa. Okay. So.
That's the legacy. That's all.
Yeah.
You get.
So, but then the executor said, would you like your father's papers? Papers? What papers? And then I saw it behind all the ballroom gowns was this green metal filing cabinet. And at first I thought, oh, it's a bunch of aviation, military stuff. He was in the Marines a long time. Maybe my brother will find it interesting. Maybe some hardcore enthusiasts or historians will. And I just packed it up and shipped it home. It took a long time before I ever actually looked at it.
What'd you think then? You open it up and you start seeing these articles.
Well, first I thought somebody else wrote it, and then I found this letter from an editor of the magazine saying, we loved your designated maintenance inspector article. We want one in every issue. And I'm like, wait a minute. He wrote this? My father? Wow. And that's what started the journey. And the book is in different parts. It's called tombstoning in writing, where you have a chapter about one person and then another and another, and then you find out how they're connected. Well, this is 5 separate, very different perspectives on my father, but when you see them all together, you get a good feeling of who he was.
Another perspective was his love life and his love letters, which were included in this.
Yes, yes, yes. There were, I think Katie got the best version of my father. He wasn't married to his job anymore, and a very playful side and romantic side came out.
His last wife, right?
This
is
the last
ballroom,
wife.
The peg leg ballroom dance.
Yes.
Your whole family, you know, Joe. There's this, there's an Amazon sitcom series. There's a,
Or Netflix. I don't.
Netflix.
Whatever.
Could be Netflix,
yes. I mean, it's you don't even know the half of it. Okay. Would you like me to?
Please do.
To
read. Yeah, give us a sample of the love letter.
Okay. Now this is about a month after they've heated up between each other. Okay. He is, I think, 64, and she's 47. Mm-hmm. I miss you, dear Katie. He's in Russia at the time. I guess it's the thought that I can't talk to you, so this is next best sweet meet. Called you Wednesday night at 8 p.m. before flight, but you weren't there. I went to a store a while ago and bought us some things, including is material for properly toasting a squire and his lady, also some Russian records. You'll pardon my anxiety, but falling in love with a woman older than myself is a wonderful but frightening experience. Do you have any pills I can take for this? Oh, not necessary? Thank you. I am reading The French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles. Have you read it? Looks like all our planning and scheming regarding my return is in vain. Best I can do is leave London April 28th. So may get in Sunday night. We'll call you from New York. Kathleen Diddledee-Dee, a boatman's girl is she. On the soft engine cover, she has taken a lover, none other than Squire Trelee.
Joe Mader, reading from a letter from George Weitz, his love letter to Katie. It's included in the writings in Joe Mader's new book about her dad called Zirkum and Pull the Push Rods, A Wry Squint at Aviation in the Mid-20th Century. Joe's going to be in Greensboro tonight at the Greensboro Central Library. Saturday, she's going to be at McIntyre's Books in Pittsboro at 11 o'clock. And, of course, we have that at our website, State of Things. org, and we are Facebook Live-ing this whole darn thing right now on Facebook Live. This you can see us. So now, what was that like to come across the love letters?
Well, you know, it's my father, so there's always a little, you know, you don't really want to know these things. But also the writer in me was like, yeah!
That's where I get this.
Oh, what a great way of putting it. Whenever somebody takes the earthy and can put it in an elegant way, I'm very impressed.
What was it you think you learned about him? Obviously, these had to be revelations to you.
I learned a lot about him and a lot about myself and what I get from him. But I learned he's just even more amazing than I realized. But he did have his flaws, and I think one of them was holding stuff in.
Yeah.
That he couldn't really let things out.
Well, in all of this romance, as you say, maybe it's just because he was later in life, he had fewer responsibilities, mm-hmm. the job was done. But again, you never, this romantic side was not apparent to you growing up.
Not at all. I never saw my parents touch. Mm-hmm. One time she said, my mom said she had a headache and he embraced her and then he made a face while he did it. That was the only touching I ever remember. So it was sad that I wish that I'd seen that with my parents. However, I did find when I was going through all my mother's stuff, a couple of things from him that showed, you know, that playful side. And I do think, and this is, I really believe they met right around the time he was writing The Inspector. She was a secretary on his floor at the CAA. She may have even proofread these things. And what I know about my mother, I know she found it hilarious. I can see her shaking with laughter over The Inspector. I think if The Inspector hadn't happened, I wouldn't have happened. And my brother.
That's fascinating. Well, talk about this because, again, you wrote a book. You mentioned your mother. And, of course, you wrote a book about her. And this is your journey as well. Moving to New York, becoming a DJ, a top-rated DJ in New York City, then deciding to move to Greensboro as your mother moved into Alzheimer's. She needed more care and had this huge doll collection. And you write a wonderful book about that meditation because you came kicking and screaming. I mean, it's the last thing you wanted to do,
exactly.
Right? Greensboro, North Carolina from New York.
Greensboring is what I heard it was called when I moved
did.
There. And it's not at all boring. Yeah, I thought I'd be back in New York in a couple years, but she passed away in 06. I'm still here.
But these are two wonderful meditations about two very different people that in so many ways talk about transformations in you and ways that you've come to understand first your mother, because that book is very much about your coming to a deeper understanding.
Right. We had a major conflict. And that was the perfect three-act play, you know, beginning, middle, end. This with my dad, it was more an exploration of his work, through him, through his writing. And I learned so much. And also the letters that I found that people wrote, letters of recommendation. I sent away for all of his government records and military records. You can do that. I got my mother's too. It was just fascinating to me to see what they made, their salaries, and the huge disparity between the two, of course. But it was really one thing that was amazing that was in that metal filing cabinet were the letters about my great-grandfather, his grandfather, who was a rabbi and a really big rabbi, and the letters when he died, written to his daughter, who was the only survivor, just blew me away. And I was in tears because I felt such a connection to him and what I'm doing now and my acts of charity and getting involved with fundraising and all of that, I think go back to my great-grandfather.
Talk about what it's done for you, though, to kind of in series come to know your mother better than your father. I mean, what impact this has on you and your own journey at this point in your life?
I wish I had asked them both a lot
more
things.
Though. You did an interview with your father like in your 20s, right? You had
20s,
some intuition, right?
Yeah, but I wish I had done more. I wish I had transcribed them because I didn't, you remember it, but then you go back and I was like, wow, there's so much here. And this is National Family History Month, October, and I'm really encouraging people. I do this year round, but especially now, to go through those old boxes and documents and photos. And the best thing you can do is get a photo album and get an elderly person, say, who are these people, and write it down on little post-it notes or something like that, and really cherish those memories. And keep asking as you get older, because you learn more and you have a different perspective.
Well, I think that's it. And I wonder if you've played this game with yourself, wondering if you had known now what you were known then, what you knew now, things would be different for you. If you would
possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. You never know. I wish I had seen more love between them. Mm. I really do.
Does it give you any deeper understanding about why now perhaps they didn't show the affection that you were hoping to see?
Yes. Yes. I mean, he really was deeply committed to his job.
Yeah.
I've always thought it's very hard to succeed in your career and be a great spouse and parent. That usually one or two tend to, not work out. But he really was an incredible guy. I mean, I had a friend say to me years and years and years, I mean, decades after she had met him, we were high school buddies, and she said, "Your father could walk into a room, not say a word, and be the most interesting person there." And I still like men like that. They're hard to find.
But if you're out there, we're on Facebook Live. Finally, let me ask you about this, because you mentioned your brother. You lost him this year, and you talked to him about this. What would he didn't get a chance to see this?
He saw an early draft, but at that point, I don't know how much he could have really, how much really sunk in, because it was a lot of suffering at the end. But it gave me the opportunity. We had a lot to talk about. And so to be losing my brother while I was gaining my father, it added more poignancy and urgency to this. And it was quite amazing to get to know him that way.
Joe Mader is a co-author of Zirkum and Pull the Push Rods, A Wry Squint at Aviation in the Mid-20th Century. She's going to be reading and signing the new book tonight at 7, the Greensboro Central Library. Saturday morning, she's going to be in Pittsburgh at McIntyre's Books at 11 o'clock. We've got it at our website, stateofthings.org. Joe, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up on The State of Things, how history made room for Trumpism. A UNC professor takes a look at the rise of the right. Stay tuned.